Yeah, we are here. You might be surprised
to see
us.
Primary financial statements. Again.
In July, we set out the buys, and you probably said we won't see you guys for a year, but here we are. Good news is there's only one paper with two issues, not even cover note this time. And the reason we are here is we thought, as a result of the process we have now started, which is preparing the exposure draft for publication in December, there are a couple of questions that arose out of the initial reviews that we thought would be useful to confirm with you. And these are the two topics or the two questions that we have in paper 21. And I just want to say Yuki did a wonderful job because we had to turn this around very quickly and because we wanted to get it for this month's meeting. Unfortunately, she couldn't be here now, so I'm doing this on her behalf. So the two issues that the paper 21 is discussing, the first question is how to present the proposals in the exposure draft, whether to present them as a draft of the new standard or as amendments to IS1. And the second one is how many examples we need to illustrate proposals on staff for subtotals in statement of financial performance. So on the first topic of presentation, why is this even an issue? So IS1, so most of the...
Sorry, have you already not taken a decision on that? Or
not? We have not discussed this with the board. We have discussed this with ASAF in July, and it's not a technical decision as per se, so we didn't necessarily need to bring this, but because we have some differences in opinions, we heard, we thought it's best to have a board discussion.
No, but we have not taken a tentative decision.
No. There's no tentative decision as of now. So on the presentation, the issue is that what is in the project is mostly in IS1, but there are things in IS1 that are not in the scope of the project. And taking ASAF's advice, I think our conclusion was that even though project scope doesn't include everything in IS1, it didn't make sense to have two standards on presentation and disclosure general requirements. So the proposal and the way we have approached the drafting is to put things that deal with general presentation and disclosure in one standard, and then we had to take a decision as to what we'd do with those paragraphs in IS1 that are really not in the scope of the project. And I'm not going to belabor with this because you would have seen the drafts, but in this paper, in paragraph 10, we explain our approach to those paragraphs, which is basically very limited change just to tidy up the wording and be consistent in wording with conceptual framework. However, we thought still it would be we opted for approach where we would present this as a draft of the new standard because we thought that this would do the best job in communicating how significant change the board is proposing with what it is doing on this project. However, having sent the draft for review with yourselves and, you know, looking at the 2,000 comments we received, some of those comments are expressed concerns about this approach in that because we are not making significant changes to these other paragraphs, whether it is justifiable to call it a new standard or whether we call it amendments to IS1, which is the question one. So I could go on and on about this, but I'm not. I'm going to stop, and I'm just going to go to question one, which is after paragraph 22 of the paper, which is basically asking you, do you think we need to change from what we have done in the pre-ballot, which is present the proposals as draft of the new standard, and propose and call it amendments to IS1, or do we carry on as we started?
Hans, may I speak François? First, if you don't
please.
Mind?
Yeah, go ahead.
I happen to be the board member that is cited, and probably due to deficiency in my communication, I mean, the arguments and the reasoning I held on this issue are not really included in the paper, at least not fully. And I think for the benefit of the discussion, it's useful if I can express how I got to that issue. I have very short preambles to make. I think the team has done an excellent work and dealing with a pressure from a timetable and so far successfully, that I think should be pointed out. And I think the paper, in one of its reasoning, points out to the issue of not delaying the project, and I don't think that any of our decisions should delay the finalization of the ED in the timeline. So what we are discussing is really a communication issue and how, in fact, people may receive from a form perspective what we should. I think all along we have communicated on this project that was part of our flagship project, Better Communication, and every time for this section of the project we've alluded to targeted improvement to the presentation of financial statements. So I think there is a high expectation among our stakeholders that these are coming as targeting improvements. And, I mean, we've seen signs all over the place. I mean, as soon as you reach out, I mean, there is a lot of expectation. So I don't think there is any risk of these proposals coming unnoticed. So if we issue a new standard, I think constituents, stakeholders, are likely to expect that the standard reflects our best practices in how we convey requirements in a very well-articulated and understandable way. The paper alludes to drafting how the paragraph in IS1 remain, those that remain unchanged by the proposals. I mean, in what I alluded to, I mean, that was much wider than that. I thought that if we were heading to a new standard, there would have to be made some improvements in the logical flow of how the requirements are articulated. I thought also that the division between the standards, so the standard and the application guidance, should be more rigorous than the point that is reached at present, so that really you distinguish what is required from how you implement the requirements. And indeed, some polishing of the drafting could be eventually done. But, I mean, having in mind solely, and so that's necessary, quite restrictive, the understandability improvement, so that, you know, things like not using a different word when no different meaning is required, I mean, things like that, and where that can lead to ambiguity. So it's not necessarily in every paragraph that it happens. So at the stage we are, I don't think that we have time to make those improvements to the extent that I think they would be needed. So to me, it's better to keep our timeline so far. We have, I think, with all the work done, which again, I think I have a very high level appreciation for it, that we engage in the consultation without delay. And I think we can do that on the basis of IS1 amendments and have nothing lost, and at the same time avoid any negative consequence on our reputation. So that was the full argument that I developed. Oh, I tried.
What could the possible negative impact on our reputation be if we just rename the standard?
I think it's
without revisiting every aspect of the standard.
It's not a question of revisiting. It's taking the time to get to a better logical flow of articulation. It's taking the time of making a better, more rigorous division between standard and application guidance. It's very important if you want people to have easy access to our requirements. The way we make that division, for example, is extremely important. What do you find in what section is important? So if we are not in a position, because of the timetable, which is important to us, to get to that better stage, I think it's not a problem. It's that so much has already been achieved, but let's call it IS-1 amendment. And we are not we're not necessarily showing the best possible practice, but at least we're not suggesting that that's our best practice. That's what I have in mind. Thank you for allowing me.
Yeah. Mary?
I don't have a strong view about new standard or presenting it as an amendment to the standard. I think if, as a group, we share some of Francoise's concerns about putting out something that's labeled as a new IFRS standard that doesn't reflect maybe in all of the content, some of the efforts we've been making about clearer language, more disciplined use, et cetera, we maybe should also think about the alternative of whether most of the carry-forward paragraphs would fit into, could join their companions in IS-8, in terms of a transfer. I'm not advocating that. I'm just saying the staff, I think, could think about that as another alternative if you hear a fair amount of support for the concern about putting something out badged as a new standard when we haven't put about half of it through maybe some of the quality improvements. The part I want to focus on is actually what you discussed in paragraph 11 in terms of, are any of the carried forward paragraphs conceptually inconsistent with the new with our conceptual framework. And I think I absolutely agree not only with Francoise's point about we should not have scope creep in terms of another work stream on this project, but I think actually the staff has done a pass, because I don't think you'd be proposing to carry forward unchallenged you've looked at it for terminology, and I'm pretty confident, because I've gone back and read all the carry forward paragraphs against the conceptual framework to see if there are any that are conceptually inconsistent. And I think I've spotted three small things, two of which which have poor wording of things that are already included in the conceptual framework. So I agree absolutely with not starting a re-deliberation, reconsideration of all the carried forward paragraphs. I think that's out, and I think even let's improve their drafting is outside the scope of what we're trying to do. But I think to assert in paragraph 11 that we have not considered whether there's any need to make changes to align them with the conceptual framework from if I think about that as, are there any conflicts? I think we're underselling what has been done, because I think there are no, there are like two questions about overlap or inconsistencies in wording. And I agree entirely that, well, I would love to make a couple of improvements to some of the language about comparatives or some of the language somewhere else. That's out of bounds at this time until we have a problem in that area.
I can understand Francoise's concerns about renaming the standard without really having polished up all the old stuff that might not be as good as we would write in the standards now. But personally, I think it was a huge mistake of the original board to have two different names for our standards. I think it was a tragedy in terms of brand, implying that all the old stuff was really not all that good and all the new stuff would be a lot better, but saddling us with two different names. And I still remember when I became chair of the Authority of Financial Markets in the Netherlands, that is first of all the acronyms of the organizations, but then also that there were two standards and why. And so I think it was, from the perspective of branding, a huge mistake. Also, difference between IFRS and ISB. Anyway, so the sooner we can get to a new situation where all the standards have the same name would be fantastic, I think. If we wait for all the standards to have gone through a total review, then that will take us into the next century. So I would be happy to if we really improve a standard. I think is what you've done is really an improvement. I would be happy to take the jump to the new name, even recognizing that we have not polished up everything. I have said in speeches, this is a game changer, I think. And I still think so. So if it is a game changer, why not change the name? That would be my take on this situation. Mm-hmm. Sue?
I think I'm in a similar place to Hans. I think that that this is a good opportunity to tidy up the structure of our standards, not just IAS 1, but I like the fact that some things are being rehoused in IAS 8 where that makes more sense, and some things are going to IFRS 7 where there's more sense, and I think we end up with a more logical package of things in one standard, and it's a new thing. So I would rather just bite the bullet and call it something new, even though some parts of it are just relocated without any change or much change from what's in IAS 1. So I agree with the approach that's reflected in the current drafting. To some extent, I feel like we're at risk of bogging ourselves down with things that really matter a hell of a lot to us, that will matter less to people outside the building. Whether we call it an amendment to IAS 1 or IFRS 18, that's sort of something that bugs us a lot, but doesn't mean much to the outside world. And we can put all of these things together. If we're going to sort of suggest that we're only doing part of the job now, and I understand the argument, we're doing some of the changes now, but then IAS 1 remnants are unchanged, so for the moment we'll just do amendments to IAS 1. I don't see that we've got another project on the horizon in the near future that I'm aware of where we're planning to revamp old IAS 1. So how long are we going to be in this hiatus, whether we've got then this sort of interim measure that could be quite a long-term interim measure? So my preference would be to stay with the approach we've got now and just to move to a new document with the, you know, relocated paragraphs unchanged. I'm happy with the way we're approaching the drafting. I think we need to be careful, actually, with how much we change that we move. Some of the changes, reflecting changes in the conceptual framework, as you know, make me go a little bit. But I'm happy with the combined new IFRS.
Anne?
I was also thinking about the naming, and I would like us to separately look again at our naming. I think our naming is really confusing. Because we have the two sets of names. And this made me think about that, because IAS 1 is an entry point, and we're going to turn into IFRS 18.
My preference would be IFRS 0.
IFRS 0, so it's a gateway.
One of the grounding standards.
Yeah, I think that this makes us think about our naming, and we're talking about customer experience, how people find things and locate things, and I think there is work that we can do on that that's outside what we're faced with today. So if it's going to be IFRS 0, it identifies it at least as a starting point. If it's IFRS 18, well, like with all our standards, people have to know where they're going and what they're looking for, because there's nothing intuitive about it, especially when it's no longer IAS 1. At least one makes people think that they've got to go there first.
Thank you. Just to say my preference before saying that, just to ask a question. If we do choose an amendment to IAS 1, mm-hmm. not creating a new standard, is it possible to amend or revise some part in IAS 1 with all kind of improvements we have made?
I think the answer is yes. I think the revised IS1 would look very much like the document that you have already seen. It's a significant restructuring and reorganisation of the existing IS1, and we'd need to communicate that in a way that is quite different from the way that we normally do amendments to standards. But I think effectively what you would see is what you've already seen. It would just be labelled IS1 rather than IFRS 18.
So it can't look like IS1 looks today because we can't fit proposals without this restructuring.
If that's the case, you know, I prefer just amendment to IS1 rather than creating a new standard. Because, you know, we are just focusing on some kind of subtitles, new subtitles, and some kind of management performance measures. These two are basically, seems to me, major improvements. And also, we are just specifically talking about the statement of financial performance and just a minor amendment to statement cash flows, almost nothing on the statement of financial position. There are many other standards there, statements there, so, you know, when I read that your nice, you know, draft, I thought that everything is already decided, so we just create a new standard. But if that was not made before, that decision was not made before, you know, based on the all kind of our stakeholders' response, if there's no change, you know, materially in some part of IS1, just move to the other standards. If the people are working with our IFRS standards for a long time, it's easy to which one is which. But in a new, maybe new beginners of the or new entrants in this world, what very, you know, young users of this kind of a standard, if there's some change, just relocating some part of IS1 to other standards might hurt the standing of IFRS, the whole standard. So I prefer, you know, to prevent our stakeholders to not, you know, being confused with our, you know, the new amendment to IS1. I would like to minimize that kind of confusion among our stakeholders.
By doing what?
Just staying, you know, in IS1.
Going into amendments. Nick?
So as Francois said, this is entirely a communications issue, if not just a PR issue, really. And it will make no change to financial reporting outcomes, whichever we call it. But it is a PR issue. And for me, I think, given how much users have said this has been such an area of priority over the last few years, certainly over the last 10 years plus, it would be a shame not to put it up there in the lights as a new standard. I think it deserves to have that kind of profile. So I would come down on the side of the staff recommendation and call it a new standard rather than an amendment to IAS1.
Gary?
I agree with Nick. I've been probably thinking for a year and a half, that this will be labeled a new standard long before we started talking as a group. To me, these are big changes, not targeted changes. Targeted changes, to me, are like the ones with the cash flow statement. You resolve multiple presentations of interest and dividends, and you start with a top line. But for the most part, the rest that's there. The fact that some of the old IAS-1 carries forward, well, that's, I think, is probably true in every new standard we write. That's just updating something that's old. I mean, that in there. And I don't think there'd be any confusion. In fact, I think it would be a good thing. If everybody actually read the thing from cover to cover, even if there's some redundancy from the old IAS-1 language, that should be, I think, by signaling in the branding that this is new, the extant stuff, you know, that people care about, it's going to be the structure of the P&L and the ownership of the operating profit line and the operating investing, you know, financing sections. Those are big improvements, and I think that's sort of a dawn of a new day, and I think that's what we should be doing. Is just, it's a new standard. It'd be nice if it could be IFRS 1, but you start where you start. But I think the old standards, we need to slowly retire.
Originally, we had decided to name all our, to keep on naming all our standards ISs, which would have been the best solution. Then also better connection with the name of our board. And we would have had the ISB Foundation or the IAS Foundation. It would have been much, much better on all fronts. Then Francoise's gave it support to the fossilizers proposal, because then there would have been no reason to rename the standard. It would be a fresh standard, a fresh version of the standard. But anyway, I've said what I've said. Rika.
Thank you, Franz. I agree with staff recommendation. I originally thought maybe my idea is almost similar to Chang already mentioned. Keep the original text and adjust the new requirement. But after really thinking about the new structure and new look, I think it's more user-friendly and understandable for the stakeholder to apply the new standards in practice. So I think I really think I don't know about the new name, but that will be more helpful at the end of the day. But one thing I want to make sure is that this standard will be issued after the issuance of the new conceptual framework. And then also a new conceptual framework, within it, it says if both consider it is necessary, departure should be explained within the basis for conclusions. So I think Mary already said, there shouldn't be so huge this departure between the conceptual framework and this new text. But still, we need to assess whether there is anything we need to mention within the basis for conclusion. So is my understanding correct?
We appreciate you pointing this out to us, and we are very grateful for Mary for having spent that afternoon and having done this work. So, yeah, we are working on it and making, you know, reflecting those suggestions.
I think there are two different issues here. The first is whether there are any major inconsistencies between the conceptual framework and the carried forward paragraphs of IS 1. As we said, I think we've done that. We haven't identified any major inconsistencies between those. The second issue is whether actually issuing a new standard, whether we would need to go through if we had the new conceptual framework in place when we developed those IS 1 paragraphs, we may have come to different answers because we're dealing with a different conceptual framework. And I think that's a slightly different point and would require significantly more work. I think it would be relatively straightforward for us to do the work and to make a statement on the basis that we haven't identified any major inconsistencies with the existing conceptual framework. I think to go further than that would require, of course, a significant amount of work. Mm-hmm.
Which nobody wants.
No.
Yeah. Jen Charles.
I think, yes. First of all, as Francois said, that there are some concerns about the form of the agricultural draft. When I read the documents, original documents, I also have similar thinking about that. But first, I check all those wording because whether there is a significant problem, because we didn't discuss before of those, you know, paragraph directly from IS 1 to new standard. I don't think there are significant issues or significant inconsistency here. So I think it's very safe for us to bring those paragraph into the new IFS. Secondly, I do believe our primary financial statement made a significant improvement change to the existing standards. So I not small amendments, particularly previously, last, I think, 2 decades, we made so many narrow scope amendments to IS-1, so many, many times. I always think that when we can take opportunity to make some significant improvements and replace IFI, new IFI brand to all the IS-1, I think this is the right time. This is the good opportunity to give a new name and and actually, let the rest of the world, as Nick said, that this is a big improvement to the standards, and let you comment on our standards. So I agree with the staff's proposal. I think just to keep retaining
that we have not discussed yet. Sir.
Yes, I think it's explaining if we go with a new standard, why we didn't re-deliberate it in a way that it is more than PR. I think we have to set out that we started this project with specific objectives, not a fundamental reconsideration of all of the primary financial statements, despite that being the shorthand that we had. We reviewed the existing standard to identify which sections that were outside the scope of our targeted objectives should be carried forward into the new standard. We did not re-deliberate and we did not redraft those paragraphs because we did not want to give an extra burden. I mean, this is sincere, because we were aware that redrafting them would have caused everybody to have to reconsider all the redrafted requirements, even if we had no objective of changing things. By virtue of redrafting them, it would have forced people to reconsider all the requirements we did not re-deliberate, and just explaining that that's why we didn't take the opportunity to improve the wording, the expression, the coherency, et cetera, at this time. Because we've heard too much, and that was one of the big pieces of feedback on FICE.
There are no, I don't think there are any objective rules about when you rename a standard or not.
No, I'm not really talking about renaming. Yeah. But I'm saying if we do call it a new standard and we carry forward a big chunk that we have not put through an improvement process, I think
that.
We have to explain clearly why, because based on what we heard on FICE, yeah, that's nice, but you said you were doing targeted improvements and we're going to have to reconsider every instrument if you redraft the whole thing, even if you don't intend to make changes. I think that's something else we should point to as a counterbalance for why we didn't try to improve every paragraph we're carrying forward.
When we discussed the approach to the agenda consultation yesterday, and we have identified the possibility of spending some of our resources on improving understandability. If we want to do that, there will be a time when we are going to improve the drafting of requirements without changing them. So,
yeah.
I mean, I'm happy with the discussion. Thank you for having it. We have no problem with the conclusion. But I would not want to include such definitive assessments that we should never modify the way things are drafted because that puts burden on people.
That's not what Mary said, of course.
I wasn't saying never. I was saying in this instance, reason we didn't.
Yeah, but I mean, well, I think, you know, making things more accessible to whoever reads the standard for the first time is an objective in itself.
Okay. Can I see who supports the staff's recommendation?
12.
Okay. And then the second question.
Yes, so we have a second question, and this is, Hans, actually something you have discussed in November, which is to do with the illustrative examples. But having done what you asked us to do, we had second thoughts. And this is... So what we discussed in November, it wasn't specific discussion on number of examples. Again, that's not technical discussion, but you had to make a decision on whether we will be providing templates, which will be mandatory, or illustrative in examples. And decision was made that we will not be doing templates as a part of this project. And then in discussing illustrative examples, we have actually then in November produced the list of examples, which is in paragraph 23 here of the paper, of different types of entities for which it was felt it would be useful to illustrate application of the proposals. Now, having gone through this process and having prepared these, nine different illustrations, we went away with the feeling that there's lots of repetition, obviously, and it does feel a little bit like a template, although the board has explicitly decided not to provide a template. Because normally with illustrations, what we do, you have an example or a tool to illustrate a proposal. What we have here is we have nine examples illustrating proposal. Granted, this proposal results in permutations, so operating profit we have different things in operating profit depending on your main business activities, but there are not 9 permutations. So by showing more than necessary, I think there is a risk that this will be seen as a de facto template, or that the board explicitly decided we will not be doing templates. So
you want to limit the number of illustrative examples to the number of permutations that we have?
Basically.
So how many would that be?
Well, we avoided saying a precise number, Hans, just in case we changed our mind again to add one or take one, so we don't have to take it back to the board, but to have like a principal decision that will allow us some flexibility in finalizing this. But we think, you know, 3 or 4 should probably do the job. So that's really all the question is asked.
Okay.
Would we do something else with those examples? I mean, I found the examples very useful to just understand the different interplays of how we would do it. And it just seems a waste to not be able to share that knowledge somehow. I realize the concern that if it's published as part of a formal document, it starts to feel like it's a have to.
That's what we're trying to avoid.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't really. Is what you mean, Dara, like supplementary education materials or
effects analysis or something?
Oh, you mean as a part of ED package?
Effect analysis could actually be, yeah.
Something like
all
that.
All the work has been done.
You say that, Hans. But to be happy with those examples, I mean, Yuki is not here. She's working on them. It's a huge job. Yeah. And to get them in a state where I would push them, it's a lot of work.
We just leave you with some flexibility here. And, I mean, even if there is a double, or it's not really a two different permutation, but if you think this is really helpful in terms of education, etc., why not? Yeah? Anne.
Well, people really like examples, and like Daryl, I really enjoyed all the examples and it helped illustrate things. I appreciate your concern that to get them ready and have everything watertight for publication is another step from just sharing them with us. But they do illustrate things, and seeing them all, even though there's bits of repetition in there, it just fleshes out the proposals. So examples are useful. Perhaps we can ask you to think about where you want to put them, rather, you know, if you really feel that there should only be a reduced number in the final document. You said that the board decided no templates, and you're worried that the examples seem to be pushing toward templates. But people always ask us for examples. They ask us for guidance to try and understand what our thinking was. And there's so much variation between entities. I can't see people looking at them saying, oh, I could see them looking at them saying, oh, this one's really close to me, I'll do this and then I'll change this and this and this. But I can't see someone saying, oh, this is close to me, I'll just stay exactly what that is. So I don't think that the examples will live on and dictate for people. They will give guidance and then people will modify them to as appropriate.
Well, I share the same opinion as Daryl and Anne have already said. I have a supplementary thinking. First of all, I think that people know what is mandatory, what is not mandatory. So I don't think that there is a lot of difficulty there. I think, indeed, that may help people who have more difficulty to structure things themselves. So I really see them as helpful. But I looked into the letters that the Due Process Oversight Committee has received on the revisions of the Due Process Handbook. And I've read there quite a lot of concerns of our stakeholders about, you know, whenever there is limited or no due process on things that we issue. There are comments about the educational material, there are comments on other things. And I think it would be a pity that we would reduce the number of illustrative examples that have a chance of accompanying our proposals and the consultation. So follow full due process. They exist. They may have to be improved. I mean, I think it's more cleaning than it is improvement. But so they exist.
So we're going to withdraw them from the full due process, and eventually thereafter think, oh, that would be great to have some educational material. Let's take one or two or three, I don't know how many board members, and that validate what has already been done and eventually agreed by us all. So, you know, if adding examples was a question of, and we would have to move the timetable to a later place, I would say, no, let's keep what we have. But we have them.
I share the staff's reservations, to use a not too strong word, about having lots of examples. I think it would be better if we could find a smaller number of examples that illustrate the things that we need to illustrate in terms of the splits between non-integral and integral, and, you know, the key location points, the key subtotals and sections and that sort of thing. I think the risk we have with the examples isn't so much on those sorts of aspects of the proposals. It's where people start to read into things, how much aggregation or disaggregation there should be. It's that sort of stuff. Like, oh, there's only so many line items, that means that's okay. And also, even though people should know the difference between what's required and what's just an example, I myself have had an example this week where I've had a call where some of the firms have got an issue where we've got a disclosure requirement in IFRS 7 on ECL, where we've got an illustrative example where we didn't have such a complete illustration, perhaps, and people are using the illustrative example as an argument that they're not required to do the disclosure because if we'd meant that, it would have been in the illustrative example. And so all of those things, those problems really do come up, even if we label things as illustrations. And so I think rather make sure that the different permutations are reflected in the examples to make the point to aid understanding of the proposals without getting into, you know, this is what a bank looks like, this is what a property company looks like.
There is also still the balloting. Well, no, this has been in the balloting process already, introduced in the balloting process.
So we had all nine, which you've seen as part of pre-ballot, but they need significant work. And I think the consensus.
I think at this point, well, clearly all the permutations have to be there. Mm. And at this point, I would just leave it to the staff to see what they can do. If they feel comfortable, first of all, can they get those five or the three or four permutations that need to be done in good shape? And if they then still have some capacity to do further work as we had thought before, then I think there would be nothing wrong with that. And then you can also still think about where to put them. And let's see how far they can get. That would be my proposal at this point. Not make a big deal out of this. Can we live with this proposal? I really want to round this off now.
Okay.
All right.
We're not voting?
We vote. Yeah, okay.
That's on what you just said, right?
Yeah.
Well, okay. I got you.
All right. Enough for today.